still float in.
Did you count us?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to get started on this presentation, and I'm sure others will join us in progress. Dick and I will just give you some introductory remarks. So Phil McNulty, who's here with us tonight, the director of the library, and the library trustees have been studying the strengths and weaknesses of the library for several years. And I know Alex Valcarce from the building department has been working with them. When it became clear that the work that needed to be done to remedy situations had to do with renovations, Phil and Jeff Herman and our own David Olson, because he manages the archives, but more about that later, are here tonight to begin the process of getting the City Council's approval to submit an application to the state for a possible grant that could defray as much as 35% to 40% of the construction costs of a project to renovate and expand our library to better serve the community. So why are we doing this now? The state has made available these grants now, and they typically only do this once every 5 to 7 years. So it was felt that we should take advantage of this current opportunity. Phil and the trustees are not asking for our project approval tonight or even at all before it gets submitted. They're asking for, we have two jobs. One is to approve applying for the grant, and the second is to approve the provisional plans and costs. So we're not, and then after, God willing, the grant gets funded, we have the opportunity to go through 558 site plan approval and all the normal things that we do with a project like this. So Dick and I have been serving as liaisons to the Library Building Committee, and you're going to have a program presentation tonight, and in January there'll be a building presentation. So without further ado, Phil.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Richard. It's been a pleasure working with you on this project so far. I'd like to introduce this a few of the library trustees in the room tonight as well. Jeff Herman is the president of the library board, and Rob Clivens is here, and Dana Hansen. Jeff and Dana have been working with Richard and Susan on our ad hoc building committee, the type of groups, the working groups that Public Buildings likes to have shepherding each project, and we've been doing that since we got our architects on board in July. I'll go into the details of how we got into this grant round. I myself have filed in my career 4 library construction grant applications. First 2 unsuccessful, and then Medway got a successful one, and Milton a successful one. And we also have with us our owner's project manager tonight, Tom Gitzunas from the Daedalus Projects, and they've handled several of the construction grant programs as well. We did not ask our architects here tonight from LLB Architects because we're really going to focus on the library building program tonight and get to the points of what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it now, and we'll leave how we're going to do it until we get the final information from the architects and we have it in good shape that we can present to you. Plus, it would be a lot in one evening to try to cover. The challenge with this project is how to convey to the community at large what is the value added we can achieve by doing a construction project on a building that is one of the newer ones in the city and one of the ones that is really, in many ways, a very strong library. That's why we did up the library report card that you got in your packets this year and this week, and really wanted to highlight what we thought were the strengths of the library and what we thought were the real points that needed improvements. And so that area is really pretty well highlighted in that with a little bit of an A to F grading. I'll take a few of the points out of that project. Your library gets over 700,000 visits a year from people. In terms of things loaned out to folks, 1.65 million. That's more than any other library building in Massachusetts. So when you look at Boston, Cambridge with their multi-branch systems, you subtract out their branches, and Newton is doing a larger amount of activity than any other library building in the state. If you counted our children's room as a separate library itself, they would be the 14th busiest library in Massachusetts. That calculates out to a number we look in the business at circulations per capita. So Newton does about 20 circulations per capita, or 20 and a half. That is higher than any other city in the state that's over 60,000 in population. And there's only, Newton is one of three, along with Brookline and Cambridge, that has a high circ per capita of over 10 of any city that's over 40,000 in population. So we really stand out in that respect in terms of how much your citizenry gets out of the library. Other measures of activity, 151,000 questions asked in our 340 open days, almost 3,000 meetings and programs that we conduct there. And we still get a lot of public requests and requests from City Hall folks for meeting space that we just can't book because of conflicts and because of the lack of availability. In fact, I've got some refereeing I have to do among my own staff when they want to set up a new program series, and I said, all right, there's just no room for it. You can't do a weekly series. Try it monthly. All right, can't do monthly. Let's try it once and see how it's going to work. In our best meeting space, Drucker Auditorium, which has a seating capacity of 125, is often exceeded. And it's not just when we have big names like Barney Frank or Amy Cuddy coming in. It often happens with our Sunday concerts. It happens with a lot of the events that you might attend where we're really got people standing room only. And it's limiting our health in that respects. So the report card showed up some of the deficiencies, and if you look at them closely, you realize one thing, that they're all related to the facility. And that is one of the big limiting factors in what we can achieve right now. So now we've got the opportunity, having done a lot of assessments, to better serve the community's needs and put together a building that overcomes some of those disadvantages. And particularly now, we've got the opportunity of a new state construction grant program. After I did my two building projects, I was asked to be a reviewer for grants in the 2010 grant round, and that was the last time they've done it. And they basically are under the operation where they get a bunch of libraries in, they make up a waiting list, and they do not announce another grant round until they've worked through that previous waiting list. And 34 libraries have filed for the letter of intent for this particular round. So that's going to take another 5 to 7 years to go through that waiting list if they all actually end up applying. That's one of the key points about the program. The other is the expected reimbursement. They have a scale where they reimburse 60% of the first $1 million, and it works down to 30% of everything above $15 million. We haven't got our full cost estimate in yet. That's due late next week. But we expect to be around 37-38% in terms of reimbursement of eligible costs, and they have a very similar type of eligible cost thing that the school building commission has. So that's the grant situation. As Susan mentioned, we basically have to have two things. The State Board of Library Commissioners likes to know that the town body representing the whole town has agreed to have the trustees apply for the grant. And that's the first authorization we need, and that's the docket item that brought us here tonight. And one that's working its way through the process from the mayor's office to get a docket number is approval to file a preliminary conceptual design with the grant as the basis for the grant application. It's not the final word on the design by any means, but they want to see that something, the document that they've sent in, has been looked at by a board, an authority that's greater than the trustees themselves. What happens after, if a grant is awarded, and Susan alluded to this a little bit, that's when we start a fundraising, that's when we start trying to come up with commitment of local funds to do the match. Once we get those funds established, we can then, you know, engage in a contract with the state, go into detailed design development, adjust the design as we see fit, get feedback from the design review committee. We've already gotten some good feedback from them from a few meetings we've had with them. We'll go through the whole 558 site plan review process that Newton requires and, you know, take any feedback from that, and then we'll commit to a final design that the state will pass off on, and then we'll put out to bid, if it all can come to pass. So a lot of opportunity as the process goes on to adjust the design in particular. One thing that is set with this application is the maximum grant award that the state will give us. So if we forgot something, that would not get additional money into the grant. So we're trying to be very, very thorough and comprehensive in terms of what we're putting into this grant. And, you know, we're not putting in the least expensive cost estimate for HVAC systems. We're putting in a system that, could be very robust. And if we're required to make adjustments further down the road in terms of price, we can negotiate with the state from a point of going down if we cut back any program or any levels of project expense. But those are all possible. The one thing that is not possible after the grant is filed is the financial parts that we put in. That sets the maximum grant award. In terms of what we're trying to achieve, the goals for our improvement, definitely updating the facility, getting up to code compliance, and it's surprising how many things are not quite in code with the 25-year-old building in terms of alarm systems and so on. Replacing 60,000 square feet of 25-year-old carpet and things like that is our starting point. A lot of service design needs we're trying to adapt our service to the way people want to operate in the current decades as opposed to what was designed in 1989 when our building plans were put together. In terms of added square footage, meeting space is one of the big investments in the program. So getting into a community center in terms of the number and the capacity of the meeting spaces we have. Another huge development in libraries is the public workspaces. And when our building was designed, it was really assumed that we would be doing mostly individual work, as people would come in and they're students and they're studying alone. It's really the co-working aspect of things has really developed so much that we want to really transform our space to be able to accommodate those people as well. Our youth services, children's room, teen rooms are one of the real focuses in terms of investment of square footage in this project, and then is the plan of creating the comprehensive city archives. Back to effective service, you look at certain populations. Seniors really have a wide, eclectic purview of what they want to achieve, so they're not any narrower than any other group. But some of the things they really like are things that related to the gathering spaces, meeting other people, related to the library programs and other events that come on, and certainly their collections and their interest in the collections in general. But a large print collection we have is one of the few that we've decided needs to grow in the library. And the library is got the fourth largest collection of any in Massachusetts. Only Worcester, Boston, and Springfield have larger collections with their large branch systems. While we have looked at our collections thoroughly over the last few years, and we have trimmed back the overall collection size a bit, we went from being fourth largest to being fourth largest a little tighter. As we've looked at collection activity, we really don't think we can trim them down more without losing a lot of value for the populace. We'd be then moving out books that are going to be used within the next year or two. Readers in general love the varied collections. They love the new collections. We bring in 40,000 new items a year. And certainly as we look at the profile of what's circulated, it's the new items that have the highest annual turnover rates, and it's the things that really keep people coming into the building. We want to make the collections accessible in many different ways, but particularly the highest access collections, we want them to be able to be much more browsable rather than just sticking them on the shelf and spying out somewhere. We want to have a lot of face-outs, and you've seen us doing that already in various parts of the collection. We want to build on that. For community groups, definitely more meeting rooms, larger capacity. We're going to, from basically Drucker and one, 15, 16 capacity conference room that is available regularly to the public, We're going to 3 conference rooms, and we're increasing the size of Brucker from 125 to 200 seats. And that should really make it that we have almost never have a program that is really outstripping the bounds of the Drucker Auditorium. Public workspaces are starting with another few shots. On the left is a study space that our architects designed in the Walpole Public Library. LLB did that. And then on the right, if you've gone into the new space at Boston and Copley Square, that's looking out onto Boylston Street. It's a real wonderful space to be in there. For large slices of the community, the public workspace, again, not just for students, you often get tutors and students working together. Our ELL program, English Language Learners, we have 300 tutors, volunteer folks from around the city, teaching up to 600 students at any given time. And a lot of them do it at other places, but a lot of them like to use the library for their meeting space as well. You look at the solo entrepreneurs countrywide. One of my staff was doing another presentation to the state and talking about libraries as co-working spaces. And she found out some data that in 2015 there were 19 million solo entrepreneurs in the country. And that is expected to grow to 40 million before 2020. It's something that libraries have always done. It's something is if you walked around the building today, you'd say, all right, there's a 30, 40, 50-something person that's going down and doing a lot of work and using the space. They use it extensively now, and it's something that libraries are really getting a lot of traction in by going into sort of the introductory level of some of the co-working spaces that you see, like in Cambridge Innovation Center and other spots around. A lot of these co-working places are popping up on a fee basis. One of the things that libraries have found that really engage the public is a cafe space. And our architects, when they did the Watertown Public Library on the top right there, they created a very active space that you can just step in off of Main Street to visit that is also combined with their Friends book sale area. And Worcester Public did the same thing. It's a little bit dark on the left side that you can do. But again, right in their main lobby of the Worcester Public Library, they have this very engaging space. Hartford Public Library, architects were visiting earlier in the fall there, and they found that they've put a cafe space right in some glass space right in front and center, which is the outside shot in the top right there and the inside, which was a very interesting treatment. And it's very similar to what Boston did on the left-hand shot again in Copley Square, where that cafe is right at the front corner of the building. Workspaces is definitely a part of the investment we're making in the library. We've got right now 11 bookable study rooms, and we're moving that to 20. And we've got about 6 or 7 individual study areas, and we want to move that to 20 as well. And it's the assessment that we made of how those spaces are being used and what the demand is that really is driving that program element. The youth spaces, as I mentioned, are one of our biggest investments here. And we're looking at 4 different age groups. The preschool, the elementary age groups, the teens, and the tween group, the middle school group. On the bottom left there, you see a shot of the new children's room at the Boston Public Library. And they created this space, which is a children's activity space. It's a tight view of it there that is something that libraries have been having a lot of success with across the country in the last decade. And the real goal of it is to have some place that is able to have young families come in and have the kids explore around a little bit when, our parents are picking out books or being with them, just to spend a little bit of time rather than just going in for a few minutes, grabbing some books, and then leaving, which is all the space that we have now. We don't have any equivalent type of space for that in our children's area right now. The K through 5 part is probably our strongest element right now. The bottom right is the picture of the teen room at the Cambridge Public Library. And the interesting thing about that is that it's a whole separate area of the building. It doesn't, activity noise going on there, a little bit of boisterous, does not impact any other parts of the building. Unlike right now, if you go over to our teen area, you'll find the teen chess club setting up and, we have had a few complaints from other people using the library that people get too excited about chess. So that's one of the definite goals of the library, to increase our, the area of our teen space and to make it into a much more distinct and separate area of the building. And we also think we're going to try one of the things that few public libraries have tried, and that's to have a portion of the teen space be really dedicated towards the middle school age for the tweens, for both collections and, you know, just the look and feel of it, so that the older the high school kids know that, well, that's maybe not my style anymore, and it's really something that we want to have as a bridge from kids who are moving out of the elementary age and out of the elementary collections into the teen collections. And we're actually going to physically try to set it up so that it's like one room away from the children's fiction area. Right now my staff is evaluating about 30,000 children's fiction and teen fiction books for which things will go into this tween collection, because whether the project goes ahead or not, we're going to try to pull off a space like this as a demo space over the next year or so. So that's the overview on the youth side. The area of youth program that is the worst, the thing that got the F in the report card, is our story room space. It is a combined story room, craft room, about 400 square feet. So for perspective on that, a classroom for 25 kids is about 1,000 square feet, typically. We've putting in maybe 30 people, maybe a little more, into the programs that we're trying to do here. And we have to run a ticket system so that we have it limited. And folks that don't get in our first program of the day can sometimes go to the second one, but and we've been increasing the number that we've run every day, but we're still turning people away because of the capacity and size, and we're really giving people a substandard experience in this space. When I look at other places that have built, that have had big enough libraries to build story rooms, like the one I did in Milton, the one I did in Medway even, the one that Millis just opened a year ago, they're all typically 800, 1,000, sometimes 1,200 square feet. The one on the right in Cambridge is larger than that. But you can see what the different dynamic is in a larger space. They built theirs for 130, and Cambridge does things over the top quite a bit. We're shooting for a capacity of 60 folks in our story room space. And we want to have a separate crafts room so that we can run people into a story hour and then translate that into a crafts project afterwards and then run another group into the story hour at the same time. It's something that the demand is incredible. It's one of the mainstays of libraries, and it is the single worst thing about the library as it exists right now. In our children's room as a whole, we typically have a lot of stacks that are five high. You see in the middle of the middle shot there, there's a five high stack with things stacked on top of it. And then the young lady trying to reach something on the left-hand side of that wall stack shows the problems with that. We have about 120,000 items in our children's collection. And as we did the assessments of collections, we found in other parts of the library, in adult fiction, adult nonfiction, there were fairly large areas we could move things that hadn't been used in 5 or 10 years on. In the children's room, we really didn't find any of that stuff. Most of the collection, that 120,000 items, had been used within the last year. And the few things that hadn't been really had disappeared. So it was not a situation where we could capture space by weeding a great deal of collections in children's. We look at other libraries, and I've got a couple shots of Boston. You can see what Boston can do with parts of their children's room on two high shelves. The books that we have for our youngest kids are on three highs, and then we use the tops for display the way Boston is here. Boston just set up the room they opened earlier this year with two highs and then a few three and four highs as their maximum for the shelves for the oldest kids. And we're just nowhere near that proper height in our room, and of course we're nowhere near the openness that this room on the right at the Boston Public Library shows. And I was there again a Saturday in October, and that place was hopping. Boston did a wonderful job with all of their renovations of that building. But we definitely want to invest in square footage to get the children's collection onto the proper size shelving. We want to invest in the children's program space that we need, and that's one of the largest drivers of additional square footage for our library project here. On the archives. The archives is situated in the current building at the south end of the children's room, so it's sort of blocking expansion there. The archive vault that we have is about 390 square feet. Reinforced fire-rated vault, the floor elevated a little bit, so it's very secure environmentally, and it's not something you easily move. So it really blocks expansion of our children's room within the building, and then the other direction is into the atrium space on the other side. So we're kind of stuck with children's on that. So the strategic plan that David had commissioned last year looked at the archival holdings of 21 departments. It found 15,100 cubic feet of current materials worth about 5,000 shelves around at those different departments. And there's a great chart in David's plan that lists all of these and lists all the departments and I think the 26 different collections analyzed in those 21 departments. The plan recommended that we take a comprehensive archives serving the entire needs of those departments in one location. As the most cost-effective and efficient way of meeting the needs in the different departments rather than trying to build things in, you know, up to 20 different locations, and achieve the proper environmental storage that they would need. The optimal locations would be certainly the City Hall property or the main library. The problem with your building here on this side of the street is it really has no back. It's hard to tack something on to this building that has a, you know, facing all three sides like it is. And the main library also has the required state approval to house documents outside of City Hall that are required by law to be in here. So there's no additional approvals that would be required by from the state if certain parts of the things that are now held in the library had to be held somewhere else. The consultant from Aaron Cohen Associates, you know, did a survey of what's around the City Hall and found some fairly unfavorable, shall we say, storage conditions. And he's recommended a couple of compact storage options. And the one that our architect has really been looking into is what they call a lean lift system, which if you take a peek at this, it's a tower-based system that has essentially something like a 4x8 platform where you can load up archive boxes and materials onto it. And then it raises up into the tower and only takes up as much vertical space as the tallest item that's on that shelf unit. So the ability to get some compact storage in there is really immense. And these systems, while they were designed for the pharmaceutical industry, they're also used in shops that store auto engines and things like that, so the dense paper materials that we have are probably also something that can be accommodated easily. And you can actually change the climate control in each of these tower units, so the archivist's need for a real cold storage unit can be accommodated in one of these without having to build a separate, distinct type of room. And it looks like a very promising a way to go about it. And once we get to the point where the architects are showing, you know, how they plan to meet our goals, we'll see a little bit more about that. So planning, how did we get here? As I mentioned, we did a lot of assessments when I started in mid-2012 for a couple of years. We really looked at how collections were performing. We looked at, we did studies about how people were using the seats within the library and counted up at four different weeks in the year what was happening there. We did an environmental scan, meaning we looked at what other libraries were doing that really resonated with their populations, and we decided what was going to work for Newton. In 2014, we put that all together into a vision statement, and we brought on one of the city's on-call architects to do a feasibility study of how we could adapt the building to meet those needs. And we called a little committee that was working with them, the Interior Design Committee, because we thought our existing 90,000 square feet would meet the need. What we soon learned as we were getting the initial reports from the feasibility study, there were two major lessons. One is that the existing building footprint did not meet the need that we had articulated, particularly with the increased youth services and meeting room space. And two, the cost was much higher than the several million that we anticipated just to do a renovation that involved no addition and no moving around interior walls. We were looking at costs that immediately said to me that we can't do this out of the context of a state construction grant. So I called up the Board of Library Commissioners and said, when's your next grant round? And they said, well, we haven't announced it yet. We'll probably announce it in spring of 16 for filing in January 2017. And that's what they have done. So we put that project on hold. We had to do our own long-range plan as a requirement for the state for every grant application we make with them, that the need for the grant has already been listed in a long-range plan. And at the same time, in 2015, David finished the City Archive Strategic Plan. So the grant round was announced in May. Library trustees had committed $100,000 of their funds, that the state aid funds that the state makes available to boards of trustees, to prepare the grant study. And they also approved the idea of incorporating the City Archives project into the project that we were doing. There are two things that the state requires that a town or city do before a construction grant can be considered. And one is the article that was got before you now, which is to authorize the Board of Trustees to apply for, accept, and expend any such funds. The accept and expend part is a little curious because they won't sign a contract with us until we have come up with our local match. So the accept and expend is a little bit moot, and I asked them why that language is something that they actually require, and they said they've had experience in the past where they thought everything had gone forward properly, and that, you know, the grant was approved on the state side, but the actual language hadn't been passed by a town meeting and had to wait until another town meeting could be convened to do that, and it caused project delays, and they just didn't want to get into that situation any longer. So don't be alarmed by that aspect. There's certainly going to be opportunities to vote our own funding aspect. It's just that if we voted Newton funding and we've matched with fundraising to do the matching part of the grant, and they sign a grant contract with us, there's nothing further that you would have to do at that point to allow the buildings department to go ahead and start using the grant funds towards the project. And the second part is, again, what's moving through from the mayor's office right now to get a docket item to approve the preliminary design for the renovation in addition. And, again, these often change. There are some times when the entire design gets changed. Needham changed theirs over. My Milton project actually built a totally different building that was filed with the grant because the state agreed that the new plans we had were better. Shrewsbury just opened this September, and they had to, because they took so long from their 2010 filing, that costs had escalated. They had to redesign their project, and they worked with the state to do that. So a lot of the design can be adjusted from what we see. There's probably a little less opportunity in our project since most of the building that we build is still going to be existing. The addition part is going to be much smaller than in typical projects, but there certainly will be opportunities to fine-tune that design. A more closer look at what the steps after filing, certainly applying, and the deadline is in the end of January. It will go to the grant reviewers through June. They will come up with a list of, and three possibilities from the grant review. One is that a submission would get an insufficient score, and that would be sent back and said, all right, you're not going to even be put on a waiting list, and you have maybe 6 months to redo it and come in and by January 2018 readmit if you want to. Our filing in 1989, Newton's filing, was rejected by the Board of Library Commissioners, in large part because the children's room was too small, according to them. They will take the scores that they assigned the projects and form a waiting list in order by score. And the top scorers would get a provisional grant award if the state has, up to the amount that the state has allocated budget money in their capital budget this year. Provisional awards would come in July and be made every July as new state capital money is made available. They've got the 34 letters of intent in now, so they'll work through those in order by score. And they call them provisional awards because, again, it's not a real grant award until you come up with your matching funds. Then we would, whatever time period that case, say it's 2020, we would try to come up with a funding match. Achieving that, you'd go to contract with the MBLC, which would give you enough money, would give you 20% of the grant award right away to go into the design development. And this is when we start really, again, working with the architects, working with the design review committee to polish up the designs that we've seen now. The things that we're required to put in now that you'll see next time are not really schematics. They're not to that level, but they're more than just feasibility studies. So there's still a lot of filling in that would need to be done in that. We'd do the 558 site plan review process. We'd go out to bidding, construction in a couple of years, and, you know, we're looking at something getting done 2025, 6, 7 time. So we're at the very early stages of what can be a long process, and this is basically trying to see if we can kick off the first step. I put on this slide, just so we can leave it up there while we talk, those are the 3, 4, 5 really critical elements that are going to be achieved by this project. The great workspaces, the improved youth services, the meeting capacity, and that's a shot of Drucker-Rec capacity during the Amy Cuddy program we had earlier in the year. Updated systems and the archives are part of the project. So now if folks have questions at this point, I'd be happy to answer them.
So you want to call on people? I'll make it a list.
Ruthann?
Thank you for the wonderful reminder of how much you are already doing. It's impressive. A couple of questions. You didn't mention the current space is 90,000 square feet. How much additional square footage are you looking at?
Our building program envisioned 118,000. I think what the architects have drawing and seeing what's feasible within the walls, it usually gets a little bit bigger, and they're looking at something that's, the archives part maybe 5,700 was the latest tally I've seen, and it's still a moving target as they finish off these plans this month. And then the library part, 121,000 at this point.
From the DRC, are you getting a letter on the preliminary design concept?
They have a meeting scheduled on the 14th, Wednesday evening of this month, which they will be reviewing the final preliminary design and giving a recommendation on it, yes.
Am I correct in saying that if we voted for both those authorizations, it isn't actually binding?
It doesn't come in any money from Newton, first of all. And there's certainly, you know, a lot of projects have actually turned down an awarded grant. A lot of towns have done that. It happened in Milton, and actually it was a good thing for Milton, because the project that they turned down a few years before I started there wasn't a great project. So they made it better and did bit. But yes, there's a lot of opportunity for everything to happen after that point.
So there's a lot of upside for us for applying for the grant, and there's no downside.
No, and we wouldn't even save much money, because most of the funds that the trustees have committed, the work has been done to get where we are today.
I noticed in your report card that parking was a D.
Yes.
This, you're not envisioning any way to increase capacity of parking?
At this point, no. And part of it's simply because of our tight times constraints, and parking, landscaping, paving is not part of the reimbursable costs from the state grant. So that would be on us. So I think it's more prudent to have us take a longer time frame to consider what the real needs are for this area in terms of parking. But it's not something that's going to affect our grant award one way or the other if we don't get it in now.
And just the last question, what criteria do they use to select who actually gets funded, and do we match up with that criteria quite well? Talk a little bit about that.
Having filed four of these and reviewed six more, they first starting off looking at the need that's articulated by the submission. They also carefully look at whether a project works as a library and meets a 20-year projected need. So they want to see population projections. They want to see demographic trends. They want to see why we've said we're going to increase the large print collection, and we back that up with the demographic trends that we're showing them for the elderly population in Newton. And those are the two major aspects of all of their questions of point scoring. Whether the system's actually going to work, whether it works mechanically, whether it's the site is feasible, a lot of those type of questions. We have to submit deeds to make proof to the state that we own the site and all that sort of thing. But the key aspects, the things that causes the biggest variation in score, is the need statement and the sense of the reviewers of how good a project it is.
Well, my suggestion is that you just change the title from library to library and community center, because you're doing so much of a community center function. Thank goodness. Thank you.
Cheryl? No?
Deb.
And Emily.
Yeah, thank you. So a quick question and then a longer one. Just to put it on the table, my understanding from the one DRC meeting I attended a couple months ago is that if you said this just now, I missed it, the archives also are not reimbursable.
Correct.
So that could be essentially done as a separate project.
It could.
Okay. Just wanted to have that out there. Then along the lines of talking about the relative risk or not of approving your grant application, clearly we're going to go through our normal process, but you said earlier, and I saw one version of a plan, that where you wanted to be extremely comprehensive and thorough in addressing all of the probable needs of the library going sometime into the future. So let's say this is a $40 million project right now. I'm just throwing that out there, okay? So let's say you get $16 million worth of grant money based on whatever plans you're putting forward. And we understand, let's say going forward, and you said it tonight, that you have some really key needs, like the big needs are youth services, primarily for all different levels of young people, and providing spaces for all different kinds of activities, which might mean one addition. But let's say the community can't come up with $24 million in 2020, 21, 22, whatever. At that point, as we're going through design modifications or development or whatever, it's a kind of a two-part question. Would we have the opportunity to scale back and still use proportionate amount of the state money? And have you thought about that as you're designing, so that there might be a plan B?
Definitely. I think I mentioned Shrewsbury that just opened this month. They really did have to scale their project back in terms of total square footage, because of the cost situation that they faced, where when they finally got town approval, it was 4 or 5 years after the grant filing. The grant allows us to put in 3 years' worth of escalation numbers, but not as much as Shrewsbury had come up with. So they went into a negotiation with the state in terms of, submitting alternate plans, making sure that their key program functions were being met, and I understand there was some adjustment to what the state total award was. They're most likely to adjust downward if we've really changed program elements. Like if we said we weren't going to build a 200-seat meeting room, we were only going to have the same size, or we weren't going to increase story hour room size, that they would really look hardly on that. If we were going to change from a geothermal system that's in the plans, the engineering plans right now, to a more mundane cost profile type of system, then it's a negotiation. They may or may not reduce it, depending on they want projects to succeed and they want projects to get built. They look at all things and they don't like to get, you know, sold one thing and build another. But we want to be in the situation where the negotiation can actually take place, where there's enough height in the grant award that we can get exactly what we want.
But program is negotiable. It's just that you'd get a lesser match.
Correct.
I just want to understand what the flexibility is going into the future. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Elder? Brian?
Thank you. First, my compliments on what you've done with the system, with the building since then. I think the new work is much more easily displayed and much more accessible. And the other side of the coin, the new return system seems to be a very cleverly done. The green lights, the red lights, the mm-hmm. You can see on the screen whether or not they've properly logged in your books. I'm curious about what you've done more recently and how it plays into your long-term things. For instance, the computer space that used to be down near the periodicals room now seems to have been blended closer up to the new collection. And there seems to have been a fair amount of space, shelf space, freed up on the third floor. I'd be curious as to how that blends into what your future expectations are. I'd also be curious on the meeting space issue. I wonder how things are blended over here. That I was going to try to park in Aldermanic spot on Saturday, but there were people already parked in there. I don't know if it was any of the rest of you, it seemed like the craft show have a noticeable impact on the parking in the area. I'm sort of curious as to both new and proposed smaller meeting sites throughout the city, like the Allen House, the Cultural Center in Newtonville, the Senior Center in Newtonville, and the Wobbin and Arbondale libraries. What type of blending are you doing so that people who can't get meeting space here do become aware of all the other opportunities within the city's infrastructure? You cited part of the Worcester Center Library as a public workspace that you liked. I must confess, the few times I've been in the Worcester Library, it strikes me as rather bleak, even in terms of hours that it's open. So it may have a great facility, but if nobody goes there, I think I'd like a little more clarification also on the archives is at the south end of the children's room. I don't go to the children's room much, like never. Not anymore anyway. I don't quite see how that fits in. Back when we've dealt with this site in the past, there's been issues raised and there's still signs up. Parking lot tends to flood. Are you looking at the water sources that go through the site and occasionally will create sinkholes?
Brian, just want to say that the president has given us until 8, but that's only 5 or 6 minutes from now, so maybe you've asked a lot of questions. Why don't you give Phil a chance to...
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Yeah, certainly the opportunity on the water issue to improve the drainage things that are coming off the library property is all to the good on that. In terms of the space we've created so far, we're definitely in transition with things, and we've been trying to, you know, we think we know how we want to go along these plans. We've articulated in our building program. We want to take the opportunity as much as we can within the existing building to try out some of these ideas to the limited extent we can and see if they're as good as we think they are. And the next one that we're going to try to do is the space that we've cleared out from the computer area is bring our teen room down to that back of the first floor area and also start developing that tween space that's there. Any other aspects that...
So are you referring people to other meeting spaces when you're full?
Yes, we do have actually on our meeting room application form, we've got a document right there that lists all of the meeting spaces around the city, other town departments and any other places that are available, and certainly can. Yeah.
So Emily.
So thank you so much for this presentation. It was really helpful. I just wanted to check and see, do you have more hard and fast numbers on what you expect that it would cost? I know 2015, during the budget discussion, you had presented some options, and I think $33 million for the total was what was presented in terms of your recommendation or your preference at that point. Do you have any sense at this point?
Yeah, that's what's in the capital plan now from that time period, and that was... numbers escalated into 2017. So no, we know we're going to have to escalate it another 3 years out. We know we're adding the City Archives project, and we know that in terms of the program that we defined 2 years ago, it's slightly larger than it was then. There were so there's a lot more detail that we've laid in terms of how big individual spaces must be. We're getting the hard and fast cost estimate late next week. So I won't speculate on what it is now, but it will be probably above the $33 million and the number that Councilor Danberg threw out earlier. Maybe it will reach that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. No, I just wanted to short comment that we also received a report from the Financial Audit Advisory Committee that our pension liability has gone up $18 million since fiscal year 15, and our OPEB liability has gone up $17.7 million. So I'm going to, I will be taking that into consideration when I consider whether this is something that's what makes sense to do moving forward and whether it's something we can afford to do.
Lenny.
So you were doing great until you mentioned geothermal, and then you got me a little nervous. I'm surprised to hear that you... that far into the planning process that somebody has come back and said that geothermal is the way to go. I mean, geothermal sounds great, but the payback period, the amount of time, it's exorbitant. It can be 100 years before you're able to pay it back for the costs up front and what the savings are. So I really hope that you're not that far along. Where did that idea come from?
You're exactly right on that point. From what our experience is and what I've seen in my own projects and what public buildings experience has been, we have to get as far into the engineering as a basic narrative is what they've done. And the architect has brought in engineering crew, and they're looking at right now what type of systems need to be adapted, what can be reused, and so on like that, with the main goal of us getting to a base cost estimates number. And when they first, the architect's engineering consultant floated the idea of geothermal, we said that may or may not happen, but it's probably the most expensive to install, so we'll let them go ahead with it. If that's what their recommendation is, we won't fight them on it today, this month. But when we actually get down to spending some money, we're going to have to seriously look at that.
And that's what's going to be of great interest to this council, in addition to program, obviously, but ultimately we want to see that the building is built right in terms of, you know, doing the right thing economically, but also realizing that it makes sense to do certain things from a green perspective that, you know, will eventually pay us back. So please don't get too far along in the process. I also just wanted to mention that I look at the presentation and I say, you know, that makes sense. I'm certainly happy to try and help that goal. But then I hear you talking about, and I know the world has changed and libraries are nothing like what they were when I used to go to the Auburndale Library. But when I hear you talking about gathering spaces and needing more public meeting spaces, Ruth Ann seems to think that it's great that it's a library and a community center. I happen to agree with, I think, the direction that Brian was going in is that, you know, we have a senior center up the street. We have all these other options. We're talking about doing some multi-generational program over at the Horace Mann building. So I just worry about duplication of effort. And I really don't know why we have to spend money on gathering spaces at the library. That's just, I guess, the old-fashioned part of me saying that. And then the other thing I just want to mention now is you would be doing the project a favor if you got members of this council, and you have two great ones, but you really need to start thinking about including more people in some kind of a building committee. Because what I've been hearing from some of my colleagues is, you know, they're okay voting for the grant, except they don't want to be committing to something where they don't know what the final plan, or at least what a pretty good idea of what the final plan is going to be in case they disagree with geothermal or whatever. And everybody that's been around here knows that once we start giving you money, we're off and running. I mean, I asked somebody to tell me a program or a project where we committed six figures and didn't follow through on it, which is good because the last thing we want to do is, you know, go giving people money to do consultant work, schematics, whatever, and then just put it up on a shelf. That doesn't make any sense. So once we start committing money, you know, whether it's a 20, 30, 40, or $50 million project, it's going to keep moving. And I think you'll get more support if you put a group together that's involved early on in trying to start, you know, to make some of these building decisions.
So let me just say that we're running out of time. We have only three more people. I think we can get it. But in answer to your, I think, very reasonable request is that, we're going to start with a January 3rd, I think, is the first meeting in January. And Phil will come back with Alex and the architect, and they're going to make a presentation to us about the building aspect of it. So we're going to see all that as a beginning then, and then it will go to public facilities, hopefully, before we get a chance. We have to vote at the next night. So it will begin to get us more and more involved in the project. So I think it's a perfect request. So we have three more people, and
What 10 seconds. It's great that we have volunteers helping students, I think you said English as a second language. I think that's great. But there's also tutors that are making $150, $175 an hour, okay, that are using those spaces also. All right? And I have no sympathy if they can't find a space because, you know, they can't find a private space charging kids that amount of money. So they use the library. So, you know, I know it's a free library, but I have much more interest in providing spaces for volunteers and the like.
So we have three more people, and then I think everybody should be prepared to put other questions in writing and send them to David, and he can get them to Phil.
Allison?
My question was partially answered. Both Brian and Lenny had started to talk about it, and it was around the community space. And I was wondering specifically how it was going to tie in, for example, with the Horace Mann School, for example, which is being proposed as a community space. I will say I see a great need for community space. I try and schedule night meetings sometimes for a number of committees, and it's very difficult to find space. As a matter of fact, our next meeting of the Solid Waste Commission is going to be at the library. I also really love the community space where we do presentations, the Green Newton Speaker Series. It's very active. I actually think it's a little inadequate for what we need. So I would like to see a holistic view of those needs. I'll have more questions later. I'm sorry that I was late and missed most of your presentation. And I love the report card, and I want to know when we can rate City Hall, because frankly, the cafe space here and the community meeting space is not up to par. But thank you very much, Phil, for your presentation and for allowing us to ask these questions.
Sure. I think on the community space, since two of you have addressed that, we know from the usage patterns and the demand patterns that it will be used heavily. We certainly need to, and I'm just learning a little bit about the Horace Mann proposal as well. We certainly do need to look at a citywide view. One huge advantage of the library is our extensive hours. So we can have things open 4 evenings a week and have community groups booking those without having to make any special arrangements of making sure that building security is there at all. It's one unique advantage that libraries have in that respect.
Vicki?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I won't ask anything about community space because I think we've thank you, those of you that have asked about it. The two other questions that I had to do with archives and parking. First, on the archives, I assume that the underground water business would not, that this would be contained adequately by engineers and has been contained already. But I guess the first question that comes to my mind, would you be digging and using any basement space for anything like archives, for example?
The existing building did not try to do that, and we've told our architects to look at that particularly, and there's not anything that they've raised at this point as an option, so no.
Okay, and because of the water issue?
Yes.
Okay, so that would mean going up. The archive space that you show there, that it's an ingenious contraption, there. How high is that as compared to the height of the existing library?
It's not higher, definitely. When we get to the actual plans, that I'll have my architect, he'll be bringing elevation views of what it would look like. Yes.
Okay, so that could be done without having an extension on the library that would be taller than the existing library itself?
Correct.
Okay. Parking. You've got 185 now versus 237 that you would need, so we're down 70. I did the math. The 70 is how many more we would need, excuse me, if we were to put 28,000 square feet and it's one space for every 400 square feet. So we would need 70. I'm trying to get an idea of how. Does anyone in the room know how many spaces there are in the rear parking lot where the elevator is? I'm just trying to get a sense for how large an extension.
Not that. Not it's, anywhere it's near not 70. That. No.
So what would be, I understand you don't have this answer, but you must have thought a bit about parking. What are some of the options, and would you need for City Hall to solve its parking problem first?
So can we, since parking isn't going to be part of the grant, it's a perfectly great, I have the same issues that you do, but could we save that for later?
I'll save that for later because we are short on time.
Thank you.
So I'll be really brief. Probably at the time, Councillor Gentile was going to the Auburndale Library. I think my mom was taking me to the old Children's Library over at the Innovation Center. So I've been using the library for a long time, and you know, I use it now, and I take my daughter there, although she tends to get books downloaded on e-books. And I just have to tell you, I would really urge us as a group to think boldly. You've done that here. I, for one, am grateful. I do not want, personally, do not want you walking out of this meeting thinking that you have to start narrowing the scope of what you're doing. Quite differently, I think you should think as broadly as you are doing now. We may cut back a little bit in some places, but the idea of thinking for the 21st century, meeting room spaces, co-working areas, the different dynamic, we use libraries differently now. I think you've done a fabulous job of identifying those issues, and I really would just leave it that I'd urge my colleagues, let's not put the constraints on what they're doing. Let them think as broadly as possible. build consensus among this council, and I, for one, will be fully supportive of these type of plans. So thank you very much.
Rick's going to be the last one.
Just a sense of history. One of the library trustees on the plaque is my father, Michael Lipoff, which is very cool. I remember as a kid him working very hard on this and pushing very hard to put Ted Mann's name on the library. This is a long process. We shouldn't even be really talking about committing money because we're really not. This is just, here's our way to get in the game. Let's get in line for this money. It's going to be years of planning. And I think this is really, you know, looking for an okay to say, walk down that road. Yes. And that's how I see this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all very much. And Phil, thank you. And the trustees that came and the staff that came, thank you for being part of this presentation.
So thank you, Phil, and members of the trustees that are here. Really appreciate it. I think you got a lot of good feedback on where we're headed. And thank you to Councilors Albright and Blazer for helping to facilitate the meeting. As mentioned, if we do have another committee of the whole on January 3rd, as many of you are aware, between our council meeting on December 19th and January 3rd, we don't have any committees that are meeting. So we will try to, I'm going to work with Councilors Albright and Blazer. We may be able to, if folks want, we could start our council meeting a little early that evening and do first call what might be relatively quickly. If we have no committee reports, we could put this on again and have a little bit more of a robust discussion if people want to. But we'll flush that out ahead of that. But that might be an option, seeing that January 3rd is looking like a very light evening right now. And I know that you talked about going to PF the next night. It just might help for discussion purposes. So I'm here to help work that with all of you. So thank you. Okay.